If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Time is now 9:13. Good morning, it's John Williams. I'm here weekdays from 9 to noon. So long, Bob Surratt. As he heads out, we head in all the way till 12 noon. Remember, on social media, WGN King John. That's my Facebook place, too. We have been busy on Facebook the last 24 hours. Before I get to all of that, do I correctly understand that 9 days in a row is the record for consecutive cloudy days in Chicago?
You know, far be it from me to tell you right or wrong, but you know, if you're going to be convicted about that, I'm going to go with you.
I believe Steve Bertrand said as much. Steve Grzanich, do you have a handle on that record consecutive cloudy days in Chicago?
Steve Bertrand is sitting here next to me. What was the record, Steve?
Nine.
9 days, he says, and it will be tomorrow.
And how I would have guessed that the record would be about 94. Are you kidding me? Nine
me
is
too.
All?
I thought nine.
Well, nine.
I mean, think nine
bad.
Is quite a few many. That's quite a long stretch of time to not see the sun.
I guess it depends on the definition of cloudy, right? Like some days, all right, the sun came through, but really?
Yeah, my understanding from the weather department is there has been 0% measured sun over the last 7 days.
So they got some fancy sun sign measuring device.
Something.
And we're on 8 going on 9. 9 will be the record. Well, hell, let's go for it. I don't, you know, my attitude is always when it's 20 below and the record's 21 below, give me 22.
Yeah.
If we're going to do this, let's
We've
get...
come this far.
Right. Exactly.
And by, and by the looks of things, it's going to be cloudy all the way through Saturday. So.
Well, hooray. Really, through Saturday. Yeah. What's today? Do we know? Has that been published? Today is Wednesday.
Today
Hulking
is Wednesday.
Smokes.
Yeah. So... I saw one forecast that said maybe a few breaks of sunshine tomorrow, but whether or not that's actually measured is beyond, you know, we don't know that yet. So we'll have to wait and see.
So 8 days, 9 tomorrow, the record for cloudy days. We'll keep you. I don't know. Maybe you don't want to set the record. Maybe your attitude is like, I'll be happy to miss this one, John. But it sounds like we're going to sprint right past that. Records relating to 250 million. Customers of a major software company spanning 14 years have been reportedly exposed from an unprotected database. Can you believe that? Exposed records were service and support logs between the agents and the customers around the world. They contain customer emails, IP addresses, among other items. These records could have been accessed by anyone with a web browser who stumbled across the database. It is important to understand how cybercrime is affecting you and me. Identity theft is a serious issue. Someone's identity is stolen every 2 seconds. You could miss certain identity threats if you're just monitoring your own credit, too. Good thing there's LifeLock. If there's a problem, LifeLock agents will work to fix it. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock sees threats you might miss on your own. Really, did you do that yesterday? Click around to who knows where to see if your stuff is protected? LifeLock does. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year with the promo code LifeLock. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com and then use that promo code LifeLock. That's the company and that's the promo code. And you'll save up to 25%. It's 9:20. I saw this on Channel 9's news the other day, and I also saw it online elsewhere. Dateline, Waukesha County, Wisconsin. Following the rules of the road is important, even if you're the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile. The Waukesha County Sheriff's Department pulled over the Wienermobile for not following the move-over law. The driver of the Wienermobile was given a verbal warning. They take that seriously. This guy's lucky, or gal that was driving it. They were lucky that they did not get a $250 or more fine. They'll even set up sting operations, right, where they put a car and then a squad car next to it with the lights on. And that's just the decoy. And then they see if people move around. And if you don't, a squad car a short distance later is just pulling people over, writing tickets. Too many troopers and officers are killed because people slam into them on the side of the road. You've got to move around. You've got to yield to those guys. The Wienermobile did not. And so on Facebook, watch me now, producer Elif. I said, cop pulls a Wienermobile over, comes up to the window and says, I said, all right, you finish this. And Facebook's doing a fine job.
Nice. Andy.
Internet usually wins.
Mike said, son, you got to be more careful when pulling out your wiener. Bob texted in and said, hold on a second, let me get these. Did you know that speeding in a truck is a misdemeanor? Bob wrote in and said, okay, hot dog, it took me a while to catch up with you. Another one said, you're the worst, W-U-R-S-T, you're the worst driver I've seen today. That may be the best one.
That's
that is the truest of them all. But how can you argue with speeding in a truck is a misdemeanor?
How about the police officer was relishing the opportunity to pull it over?
Andy, Andy's playing at home.
How about move your buns over?
Nice. Are you guys done hot dogging yet?
Son, you got to be more careful when pulling your wiener out. Thank you very much, Mike. We know. 312-981-7200 if you want to play along. You can text in 312-981-7200. The story, the picture, and some of your comments are on Facebook. You already got us off to a good start. Thank you very much. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. LF, are we taking line one or not? You said yes or no? I said yes. Hey, Stan, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, King John.
Hey, what's up?
Well, the officer pulls up. He says, sir, while handling your wiener, we're going to have to check your length and width of your axles.
Calling. See, here's why I don't want to do this. For that very reason.
It's going to get ugly.
I know. 312-981-7200. Well, if you've got to be a better monitor for us on these. Yesterday, I saw online on the Tribune's site, top 10 steakhouses across the country ranked. These are steakhouses that have enough chain stores that you've got them in Chicago and San Francisco and all, et cetera. Number 10, Shula's, which is right next to our radio station. Mm-hmm. Morton's is number 7 on the national list. 6, Ruth's Chris. Do we have a Ruth's Chris
in Chicago? Yeah, I think we do around here,
yeah. It's a national chain. Wolfgang's is 4. Smith & Wolensky is the number 3 best national prime steakhouse. The category includes the quality of the steaks, the quality of the wine list, the potatoes, the decor, the service, the whole steakhouse experience. Number 2 nationally is Del Frisco's Double Eagle Steakhouse. Never heard of that. Number 1, the Capitol Grill, which we have downtown. I don't go to these places. The idea of eating a $92 steak just terrifies me. I would be happy to go if you would invite me and you would pay. But the idea of eating a $97 steak, the thing I think that bothers me the most about these places, and I'm not knocking them. I mean, hey, they do real well and happy for you if that's your deal. But you pay $22 for a potato. And having been to the Jewel recently, I just know I'm being overcharged. Like, I don't normally get a steak like that, and I don't have an oven that cooks at 2,000 degrees and sears it. I believe you can do the steak better than I can do the steak. But we've done broccoli before, and I'm telling you, it's not that expensive. So that's kind of where I get off the bus. Capitol Grill is 1, Smith & Wolensky 2, or rather 3, Morton's number 7. I'm asking Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune, what is his top 5 in Chicago? And I'm specifically asking him also, give me the best value. What's the best value for a steakhouse in Chicago, too? Like, if money were no object, fine. Yeah. But say money is. And, you know, you're not going to go to the Ponderosa. Give me something in between, Phil. Where's the best value for one of these steakhouses? Okay. I'm just reading some of the comments on the Wienermobile. We're going to have to pre-read these before I just... Although ketchup does come up a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
You were going so fast, I couldn't catch up. Yeah. Are you a Wienermobile or are you just happy to see me? Okay, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. I like that one.
But again, I think we'll pre-read them before he puts them on the radio. One other little list for you, and it comes again from yesterday's show. We were talking about National Plan a Vacation Day. which yesterday was, as purported by the Vacation Planners of America. We reached out to Sue Kelly over at Kelly Cruises. We asked her, give me your top five destinations. She said, number one, Destiny, Florida. That's, you can drive 14 hours and be there overnight. You know, one day's travel, you could be in Destiny, Florida. She said, there's a lot of hot places in Florida. A lot of folks like to go to Florida. Destiny is not as well traveled. You don't have to go as far. It was a good spot for her. Number two, Alaska. Go see Alaska while it's there. Number three, Egypt, she said, is internationally really hot. Egypt is one of those places that places in Israel might be this way, anywhere in the Middle East, Africa, wherever. Places where maybe there's one bad news story and then nobody wants to go there. And then it's quiet for a while and they go, you know, the pyramids are still there. I've always wanted to see them. Egypt to me sounds fascinating. And she said it is a very hot spot right now. River cruises in general was her number two, 5432. She said, you think of river cruises and you think the Danube or the Seine in France, but these river cruise companies like Viking and AMA have expanded the places that they do river cruises now. In all of the continents have river cruises, and there are more and more really luxurious and fairly affordable river cruises out there. She said that's the thing. And number one right now, she said, as a hot destination is once again Greece, not just Athens anymore. And then she talked about Santorini and Mykonos, which are famous places to go to in Greece. But she also mentioned two places maybe you haven't heard of so much. One is Naxos, which is a real foodie hot spot. They've created a travel food culture there. And she said Naxos in Greece, if you're traveling overseas, and Crete in Greece is a hot spot to go to. One last note about that. Yesterday, Sue Kelly at Kelly Cruises said that there's something you'll hear about on the vacation front these days, and that's called the slow travel movement. Rather than going to seven cities in 7 days or nights, people go to one place. And it might be Naxos that you've never heard of before. And the trend now is to book a vacation in some place and just stay there and go slow. And not be in a rush to go to the museum. And then quick, get on the bus. And then we're going to go to the Acropolis. And now we're going to go to the hot dog stand. Which I've done and you've done. And that's one way to do it. I tend to travel that way. But the movement now is the slow travel movement. I kind of like the sound of that, to be honest with you. 9:29 on WGN. Our news click, the daily web poll question at WGNradio.com, was about witnesses in the impeachment. It was simple. We said yesterday, witnesses, yes or no? A Quinnipiac, or is it Quinnipiac? How do we say that? Quinnipiac?
Quinnipiac.
It was none of my options. Say it again, Steve.
Quinnipiac.
Whenever I need that poll, I'm just going to point to you. Hey, there's a new survey out from the...
Quinnipiac.
Thank you.
Just say Q.
The Q poll. 75% of Americans said yes to witnesses. We asked you witnesses yes or no. We gave you three options. Yes, Bolton, Biden, one or both. 45% of you said yes. Give me Bolton, give me Biden, give me one, give me both. 45% more said yes, but only Bolton, and 10% said no witnesses at all. Lots of comments. That conversation continues on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. And again, according to the
Quinnipiac
poll, 75% of Americans are in favor of witnesses. We'll see how that goes as we follow the news today. After Steve Grzanich's news here, I had a harrowing experience buying light bulbs yesterday. Have you bought light bulbs lately?
Did you have to buy the smart bulbs? Did you buy the LED bulbs?
It used to be a lot easier.
Yeah.
A couple of tips for Mr. Fix-It. Speaking of redundancies, John, I've always despised hot water heater. Hot water is already hot, so why are we heating it? Just let people have that one. ATM machines, PIN numbers, and hot water heaters, let them have them. It didn't cost you anything for their purchase of that extra word. John, here's another illogical expression, hot water heater. A lot of calls about that yesterday. I didn't even ask for it.
I love the street cafe. I'm on a street team. I love Meryl Streep in the flick. One true thing. I love traffic. I love the colors yellow and green. I like talk radio when they talk about things. Let's talk about things.
I wasn't even talking about that thing yesterday. But boy, you say hot water heater and then people say, okay, then you might as well just say pin number two because that's redundant. I know what got us on that. I said ATM machines.
Mm.
It's a automatic teller machine.
There's one in play-by-play, too, in baseball, which I get all the time. You know, it's a natural habit when you say the pitch is down low. Well, where else would down be?
Right. But, you know, my attitude about it with all of these is, how did that harm you?
Oh, it did.
Like, are you so busy that you don't have time to hear the word low after down or machine after ATM? So I know it's a little annoying. And some of them, I think, are truly annoying. But hot water heater, ATM machine, and PIN number don't bother me.
Until you, as you did, so spell them out.
Speaking of listener feedback, following the rules of the road is important, even if you are the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile. The Waukesha County Sheriff's Department pulled over the Wienermobile for not following the move-over law. The driver of the Wienermobile was given a verbal warning. I said on Facebook, tell me what the officer said when he walked up to the driver's window. 847 said, to be frank with you, fella, you're in trouble. Officer says, I don't relish giving you a ticket.
Is this Wiener music that we're playing
this here? This is Wiener music in the background. You've heard some of these before. 815, you're going so fast I couldn't
catch up.
847, are you the Wienermobile or are you just happy to see me? I'm going to read that one about every 10 minutes. 630, I've got to be frank with you, John. This bit is not very funny. May have a point there. License and relish, please.
That's good.
If you have any other suggestions, including find other work, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200, you text in. What did the officer say when he pulled over the Wienermobile? And please keep it cleanish. Doesn't have to be super clean, but come on, this is a family show. We've got children and grandparents listening. We also mentioned the top 10 steakhouses in America, according to a survey done of some fancy folks. But I'm telling you, I don't have $1,000 for a steak. And if I do, I still can't bring myself to spending $20 for a potato. So you have been texting in on that. We'll ask Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic at the Tribune, in the next hour to give us his best steakhouses in Chicago, but the best value for a steakhouse. I don't want a cheap steak. I want a really good steak. I don't want to spend $98 on it. 847, totally agree about the price of potatoes at fancy restaurants. When I get 20 pounds of potatoes at the grocery store for less than one at the fancy restaurants, I just can't do it. Tom's Steakhouse in Melrose Park. Crapples in Worth. Roy from Mini Moves in Broadview, listening online. Thanks for listening online to the folks from Mini Moves. They like Tom's Steakhouse in Melrose. John, Capital Grill, number one on that Tribune list, is definitely worth it. During Restaurant Week, it's the best time to try it. This is Restaurant Week.
Right.
It runs 17 days this year. And, you know, you have a fixed price and you can get a steak. Some of the expensive places will do an upcharge. So rather than the uniform, everybody pays $45 for dinner. You might pay $50 or $55, but that's still a lot less than you would most nights at some of these fancy places. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I was at Home Depot last night. I had to buy light bulbs. I actually took a picture and sent it to Mr. Fix at Lou Manfredini. I said, when did this get so complicated? I just need 460 or 75 watt bulbs, and I needed a few hundred watt bulbs, and I must have stood there for 20 minutes trying to make the right purchase. And that's just the beginning. I just read them when they come in. I'm not responsible for these. I'm just a boy standing here talking to you. Wisconsin trooper pulled the Wienermobile over, walked up to the window and said, okay, hot dog, get your buns out of the vehicle. You're in a real pickle. 1 to 10, that Lou Manfredini. That was a pretty good one.
That was pretty good. I'd give it a 7.
I don't know. I can't imagine a worst one.
There's a lot of them out there.
Lou Manfredini is our Mr. Fix-It at WGN Radio. You hear him Saturday mornings and when I need help. Last night we were in the Home Depot. Sorry, Lou, but...
Wait, stop that. Right there, right there. Let's talk about that. Last night you and your wife are in the Home Depot calling me about light fixtures and light bulbs while you're in the Home Depot. And we talked for how long?
10 minutes and 7 seconds.
Yeah, and this is my new job now, because people always complain when they go to Home Depot and there's no one there to help them. I'm just going to go put cards there and say, oh, not sure? Call Lou. And then we can do something like, I'll do like a parking meter. You know, you can scan, I'll have an app. And people can do it that way, and I can make a couple bucks.
I think, I'm not kidding, there's a business for somebody. If you're in the Home Depot and you're like, hello!
You can do it. Lou can help.
And for $1 a minute, I would have paid. I think there are sex lines like this. For $1 a minute, I would have paid Lou for information about how to buy a light bulb yesterday. Okay, let's not talk about that other part. But here's the deal. So I'm standing there, and I needed a 100-watt bulb. I took a picture of it and sent it to Lou because I'm like, which one am I supposed to buy? I don't even know how many lumens I want. And this is my house. And then there's the watts. There's, do you want the orange glow or the white glow or the blue glow? Do you want an LED bulb or some other kind of bulb? Just give me, start wherever you want, Lou, but can you give me some ballpark advice on what to do these days?
So what has changed in how we buy light bulbs now is, you know, no longer are we buying by wattage, which is something that we all grew up with, right? We kind of all knew what a 40-watt bulb, the kind of light that it gave off, a 60-watt bulb, a 100-watt bulb, all those things were, really had nothing. They always had a lumen rating and a color rating, but we never used that because it was something that we were all very comfortable with. The advent of CFLs sort of started the change, but it was still sort of this crossover between wattage, and people sort of did that. Now CFLs are kind of a thing of the past, and we're moving to LED lights. And so the two things that you're going to use when it comes to buying light bulbs is the lumens and the color temperature. And most light bulbs will have a guide on the back. So this is a for instance, okay? So a 40-watt incandescent bulb, which you can no longer really buy anymore, halogens that use the same similar technology, that 40-watt bulb, which used 40 watts of electricity when it was on, the halogens used 29 watts, so considerably less. I'm going to take CFLs out of it because it'll be hard for you to find a compact fluorescent light bulb now because everyone's gone to LEDs. That same light, the amount of light coming off of that 40-watt regular bulb, now in an LED only uses 7 watts.
So they're more energy efficient. That's good.
Super, super energy efficient. And, you know, the thing I will tell people this is that, you know, when LEDs first hit the market, everybody was saying, oh, you put this bulb in, it's going to last 30 years. And for some, that is true. But you can now buy LED bulbs for 99 cents. That 99-cent LED bulb is not going to last you 30 years, but it will save you a lot of money on your energy while you're using it.
All right, but let me ask you this, if I may, Lou.
Okay.
So I'm looking at the picture I took last night. Do I want the soft white, the bright
yes.
white, or the daylight bulb for my living room?
Okay, so this is the other thing that drives people crazy is the color temperature. So when LED light bulbs first came out, the color temperature was wrong. It was still too hot. So this is the Kelvin rating for light bulbs.
It's on the back of the package. It's on the back of the package. You don't think about this normally, but there's a Kelvin number. Okay, fine.
Correct. Right. So anything below 3,000 is warm white. Now, in my opinion, warm white starts at 27. That you want like 2,700, 2,800, because anything more than that, the color temperature changes and people just don't like it.
Okay, stop right there. Wait, hold on. So
okay.
3,000 or below, the warm light, that's the soft white, that's what I want for my interior spaces, my bedroom, my living room, stuff like that.
Your living room, your family room, places that you would use as general lighting. Now, and you could even say your bedroom, but I will tell you that there's like one step up on that warm lighting
within a bedroom if you're someone that reads and you have a lamp on.
Right.
If you increase and go to like 3,000, even to 3,500, you'll still be in the warm white realm, although on the brighter side, meaning the light is whiter. But that might be more advantageous in a bedroom where you may do some reading and you're in bed and you're falling asleep. And so for me, other than a commercial application, you're always going to stay in that 3,000 Kelvin or below. Now, if you get into 4,000 Kelvin, that's, you know, a retail location or an office or or something like that where you may, or a, you know, they'll use that in hotel rooms, you know, for a little bit brighter light because they don't have as much lighting in a hotel room because it's mostly lamp-based. There's no overhead lights. But the one other thing I will tell you about LED bulbs is I almost always give this advice. Put them on dimmers. Because I mentioned to you last night when I was talking to you and Brenda, I changed out all the recessed can lights in our kitchen when we remodeled it with LED lights, and I am married to the princess in the pea. And she walked in, and within 5 minutes, she said, did you change the light bulbs? And she noticed right away.
Well, why wouldn't you?
Well, right. But what I hadn't done yet, because I just put the bulbs in, is I had to change to a dimmer. And when you put a dimmer on LED bulbs, which has to be a universal dimmer, if you have an old dimmer from, you know, your old can lights, you cannot use that with LED bulbs because electricity will bleed through that device.
Yeah.
And you could actually get a flicker out of your LED. The new universal dimmers have electronics in it, and it cuts the electricity off.
I'm out of
and
time.
And it gives you the control. All
I'm
right,
out of goodbye. Time. So So the new segment we're going to do, Lou, is Oh My God, Lou, where I or a listener calls in, and you have to begin your question or comment with Oh My God, Lou, and then it's something that's exasperating to you in the new real world we live in. Will that be okay with you?
I mean, I think that that would be absolutely fine. And then I'm going to leave you with, it was nice to meet you. Yeah, hope to see you again soon so we can catch up.
It was nice to meet you. Let's catch up later, said Lou Manfredini.
So if he charged a minute, a dollar a minute on his app, just think how much money he'd make, because I've never heard him answer a question in a minute.
Well, that's the joy of Mr. Fix-It. Steve, you did the story about Martin Sandoval. Do we call him Marty or Martin?
I think we call him Martin.
Maybe less these days. So this is this Illinois senator who's in charge of the Transportation Committee and was steering deals towards this red light camera company.
That or protecting the camera company from laws that might hurt it.
Right. Okay. So he's running interference for them.
Right.
And then they are giving him some money under the table.
A lot of money.
And it sounds like other people were getting money too. So then one of the representatives from this red light company is wearing a wire at a restaurant in the suburbs, and they record him, and he's going, look, I'm doing all of the work here. Everybody else is getting money for nothing. How come I can't get more money? Even though he was getting money.
Right.
And the amount of money that we're talking about is $250,000.
For the senator, yes.
I'm just going to be this way for the rest of my life. I'm still amazed. I'm still amazed that people get caught doing stuff like this in Chicago or Illinois. When are these people? Subscribe to the Tribune. It's in there every day. You will get caught.
Well, maybe or maybe not. Maybe that's why people keep doing it, because there's so many others who haven't been caught.
That's maybe the scariest interpretation of this, and maybe the most logical one. Why would they do it? Because, John, you have no idea how vast it is.
Right.
That for every guy that gets caught and you go see another one, there's 92 guys going, hey, this is working out great for me. I got a new swimming pool. I don't know if they have swimming pools, but you get my point.
That'd be a bad investment here, I think. It's not warm enough.
Our friend Kristen McQuarrie writes editorials for and columns for the Chicago Tribune, follows the state scene as well as anybody. And I asked her just to tell me what I'm missing here. Hey, Kristen, it's John. Steve is here, too. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Jump in there anytime, Kristen. What am I missing?
Oh, you're not missing anything. I mean, I think we are a state that is known for corruption. This is obviously very blatant, and it surprises me too. I mean, even though I've been covering government for as long as I have, this is someone who was taking cash bribes after the raid at Ed Burke's office, after everyone knows the feds are kind of sniffing around, after there are questions about who might be wearing a wire. He is still doing these transactions with this person for SafeSpeed who was undercover for them. That person has donated a lot of money to candidates. SafeSpeed has donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to candidates. The plea agreement with former Senator Sandoval mentions five other participants who took bribes as part of criminal activity. We don't know who those five are yet.
Really?
The U.S. attorney, who doesn't normally speak on these kinds of issues, did come out and talk to reporters a little bit. John Lausch, he's a Trump appointee who's been there since 2016, and he basically said, we're just getting started.
Who else, then, are the other five? I mean, are we talking about state lawmakers, right?
It could be elected officials. It could be mayors. Separately, in a couple of federal raids, the Sun-Times has reported that the Oak Brook Terrace mayor was found with $60,000 cash in his house.
Yeah, I love that.
There is still a sitting Cook County commissioner. I'm not sure why there hasn't been discussion of him to be ousted at this point and step down. But Commissioner Jeff Tobolsky, $51,000 in cash found in his home. Again, that's not a crime, but these are people who were advocating hard for these cameras to be installed.
So it's not a crime to have $60,000 in cash, although, boy, would my wife be surprised if I had a duffel bag or maybe a safe. But what is the purpose of having all of that cash in your home? We have ATMs. We have debit cards. You could put that money in the bank. It would seem to me like it's not so much the keeping of the money or the having of the money as it is the reporting of the money. I'm just talking speculatively here, but if I gave you cash and you deposited it, then there'd be a record of that. But if I gave you cash and you just left it in your home, you wouldn't have to have a record of it, and you don't want to have a record of it because it's ill-begotten. I mean, that's what that looks like, right, Kristen?
Well, sure, just hypothetically speaking, if you have $60,000 cash, it's not traceable. So imagine all the times that you do use your debit card now, getting gas, groceries, restaurants, all of that is at your disposal to pay in cash if you have a stash like that. So it also ensnares, it calls into question the top CEO of SafeSpeed,
right,
who is also very politically connected, who has said all along, we don't pay people off. I don't know anything about this. She is sort of mentioned offhandedly in the plea agreement when the senator is asking how they can divide up the money that's going to go into his campaign account.
Every time there's a story like this, that's the other part that amazes me, if I may, Kristen, and that is, okay, I'm naive enough to be thunderstruck by the criminality of our lawmakers. But then on the other side, there's these businessmen and women who, that's weird. Hey, guys, how do you justify that to the accountant or the bursar, the CEO or the CFO, all of the people that are in a big multi-million dollar company like that? How do you say, I need $60,000 in $20 bills, and I need another $50,000. Oh, and I need $250,000. I mean, where's the accounting on that, if nothing else? And so those people are just as criminal as the state lawmakers, right?
I mean, it's a good question. How do you come up with $60,000 cash? Or like you're saying, I mean, one of the bribes was $15,000. The companies will say probably that, you know, they were doing lobbying activity. They were hiring these people as consultants.
Huh.
That's always a popular reason to throw people on your payroll. Obviously, Commonwealth Edison is under scrutiny for hiring a bunch of lobbyists, and there's a question as to whether or not there was any actual lobbying work that was done. They make a lot of money. I mean, there was a bill in Springfield to eliminate red light cameras. Not for this reason specifically, but this bill was floating around. So this is why they paid what they called in the plea agreement protection money, to make sure that bill didn't get called to a vote.
But if there's money, Kristen, that much money changing hands or floating around for the lawmakers, the higher-ups in the companies involved have got to know, right? I mean, this money's coming from someone. Has to be approved at some level.
When we have a party here, somebody counts the pizzas. I mean, literally,
right.
we're talking $15 pizzas. I know we're a small company compared to these other ones, but answer that question.
I mean, I don't know. I think it's hard to imagine that in these companies like this that there aren't executives who know this is going on. And I'm not implicating anyone by saying that. I don't have any specific knowledge of that. I just think it would be hard to explain why this money is shoveling out the door. There's another example in the plea agreement where they tried to come up with kind of a baloney company, Senator Sandoval says. And so some of the money the Tribune traced to this consulting company that I think is a legit consulting company. But, you know, they're just trying to find all different ways to mask bribery.
So the consultants and the lobbyists, those are legitimate occupations, right?
Oh, sure. Yes. I think what we're learning is just a more lifting of the curtain. There are a couple points where Sandoval, the money is just going into his campaign fund. In Illinois, if you had money in your campaign fund prior to 1998, when a law was passed, you are allowed to spend that on personal items. You can pay your mortgage with campaign money as long as you report it to the IRS. I know. It is completely Wild West, crazy stuff that Illinois allows it, but they do. And so in the case of Sandoval, the second count is that he didn't report money to the IRS, and that's what catches up a lot of these people. I mean, there's an argument to be made that campaign contributions in and of themselves are some sort of, you're wanting something in return if you're a big company and you're writing fat checks to elected officials.
630 texted in and said, hey, John, I'll bet those Democrats, if they ran for re-election, would still get re-elected. Let's hear it for Illinois! Exclamation point.
Yeah, I think we're up to 33 Chicago aldermen who've been marched off to prison based on some sort of corruption connected to their official role.
Well, that's barely more than half.
I've heard that as an explanation, but there's a lot who... One of our lawmakers was on, or an alderman, he goes, yeah, but a lot of them haven't. And I thought that is a very bad defense.
Kristen, so John said, why would a politician do this after others get caught? You know, why? And you just brought up Sandoval after the Burke raids. But, and I posed one possibility is that because we're just hearing about a small fraction of them who are actually doing it, and a big majority are not being caught. Is that possible? I mean, what percentage of the corrupt schemes do you think we're actually learning about?
I do not think that most lawmakers are taking cash bribes in restaurant parking lots. I really don't. I think a lot of the corruption in Illinois is more in the fabric of the way we just transact business. And it looks more like what Ed Burke is accused of doing. Give my law business some business, and then I'll be nice on these different types of legislation that you're looking for. I mean, they think they're untouchable. And in the case of Sandoval, remember, we just passed last session a $40 billion infrastructure program that went through his committee. And it's being paid for by you when you go to renew your driver's license. Your license plate fees are now higher. They raised all kinds of taxes on gasoline to push that through. And now I think it's legit to have some questions. And actually, the governor has said he's going to look through that bill more carefully. How many other little favors were stuffed into that program that taxpayers essentially were going to be paying for?
Does this sound a little bit, or maybe not, like what sent Blagojevich to prison? His argument, among others, was that's the way business gets transacted. We have not adequately defined what is and isn't legal lobbying in the state of Illinois. If you want to put some money in my campaign account, that's okay. If you want to do business with me, that's okay. And why wouldn't I notice that? And now we've got a relationship. We're working professional friends. And now I do like your hospital or construction company or whatever. And I am going to steer business your way. I mean, that is legitimately happening over and over again. And then when somebody steps afoul of the law, they say, wait a minute, when did the rules change? I completely understand that attitude out there, Kristen.
Well, there's a difference between what we would like to think is that different interests are giving money to lawmakers who legitimately have a concern. Let's say you're a lawmaker and you believe in school choice. You believe there should be charter schools. You believe it in your heart, and you push for legislation to create more school opportunities through charter schools and private schools for low-income kids. Well, who's going to support you? The charter schools. You know, that seems that's a more legitimate transaction, and they're going to give money to your campaign account to make sure you get reelected, not in an envelope in a restaurant parking lot. But yes, these rules are, you know, you can put all kinds of laws on the books, but if we keep electing snakes in this state, they're going to find ways around them. And that is, this is an example of that.
You think the rest of the snakes then would say, hey, we got some snakes in here, let's get them out. I mean, it tarnishes the lot of them. You know, Heather Sharon, when I put this to her one time in our podcast, The Mincing Rascals, I said, you know, what percentage is it? And she goes, oh, it's like, it's the smallest fraction of people that are like this. But it doesn't seem that way to me. If I don't know how the other lawmakers or aldermen and women feel about it, but I would be so ticked at the Ed Burks and the Marty Sandovals and the, I'd be ticked at the Madigans of the world because they all look bad by association.
Yes, but are those people still serving? Yes, they are. Ed Burke is still serving on the city council. Mike Madigan is still chairman of the Democratic Party and Speaker of the House and a state rep. There's absolutely no, you know, there's no pressure on them for among Democrats to remove them because they're dragging the party down. I mean, these are people who are still in power.
Kristen McQuarrie's on the phone, editorial writer and columnist for the Chicago Tribune, follows the state scene so well. Her Twitter handle is Statehouse Chick, I believe.
Oh, it's not anymore.
Oh, you got rid of that.
It's McQuarrie Kristen, yes. It's just my name.
You've got more modern.
Okay, so can we draw, you were talking about the Democrats and why they won't stand up, and that's the state and local level. So is there a comparison to the federal level? Like, you know, Republicans, people say, why in the heck won't rank-and-file Republicans stand up against President Trump? It's because he's got the power over them to, whether it's by Twitter or whatever, really hurt them. Why won't a state legislator stand up against Mike Madigan? It's because he could squish him.
Really? Does he have that much power, Kristen?
Well, I mean, we're talking about people who are charged with crimes now at this point. There's a state rep. Now we have two state senators who are, now one pleaded guilty. Another one is facing trial. It's a little different than just politics at the federal level. You have actual people being charged by the Justice Department. Does Mike Madigan have a lot of power? Yes. I mean, we talked before when I was on your show, John, about all the money he's still raising.
Oh, my gosh.
And lawmakers are dependent on that. They're like small children. They can't run their own races. They rely on him for his staff support, for mailers. They really just need to separate and go raise your own money, run your own campaigns, and then you don't have to be dependent on this corrupt apparatus.
Lastly, the meta question is, do these people get corrupt when they get into office? Or were they corrupt people who thought this would be a good way to make a living? I've always wondered if the power corrupts them, the cash, the influence is intoxicating, or in fact, we just put snakes in to begin with.
I think it's a little of both, but more often than not, it's we elect people who have no intention of, you know, behaving in this way, and they get, like you said, intoxicated by the power, the money, the trips, the, you know, people who came from little means in some cases, and then all of a sudden you are getting invited to fancy parties and condos and boat trips, and you have your phone is ringing a lot. You have people asking you for things. You have control. I think it's very powerful and becomes sort of like a drug.
Kristen McQuarrie writes in the Chicago Tribune. Anything that I should be looking forward to from you in the paper anytime soon, Kristen?
Well, I mean, we'll be writing a lot about this. The governor is giving his State of the State address at noon, and we're waiting to see if he's going to address some of this in his remarks.
Be nice if he sort of drops some sort of hammer the way the mayor did. You know, I'm not going to put up with this anymore. I don't know how you execute that, but it'd be nice if he said what we are all thinking, and that is this stinks and we're sick of it. You think something like that's going to come out of him?
I think so. I mean, he has said he's kind of nibbled around the edges, but he has the money to steer the party in a different direction, and he needs to come up with a very specific ethics plan if he wants voters to think that, you know, this is a legitimate change.
Yeah. An ethics plan in Illinois. That's an oxymoron. Well, I'll be anxious to see what that sounds like and looks like. And I don't mean to be so cynical. Let's root for that. We'll be listening, reading, and watching. Thanks, Kristen.
Thanks, John. See you later.
Kristen McQuarrie writes for the Chicago Tribune. By the way, Steve, Chris Bryant, you can't feel sorry for the Cubs and you can't feel sorry for Chris Bryant because they're all millionaires and they all have nice hair. I mean, there's just nothing to feel bad about any of these players. But it seems to me like if I'm the Cubs and I want to keep the MVP superstar, this is not how to handle things.
Well,
am I wrong about something here?
Well, this goes back to right when they didn't bring him up early in his rookie season so that they could keep him an extra year. So that was the strategy back then. I don't think it'd be their surprise they're defending it. It also makes him more attractive in a trade because they could trade now a two-year contract rather than just a one-year contract. So, I mean, it's not, it's business, I guess, right? That's what winning World Series is all about. When you don't handle it in a business-like manner, you lose. And when you do, you have situations like this.
Let's go to Phil Vitale, restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune.
Yep, it's just business. No. I want to use my Godfather voice. I want to do my... it's not personal, Mike!
Yeah, but it is. The fans get attached to players.
Well, I think the Cubs got kind of, you know... let's put a nice word on it, disadvantaged by Major League Baseball's foot dragging on this issue. I mean, it's binary choice, up, down, yes, no, 1 year, 2 year. I don't know why it took them this long to figure out, but in the meantime, the Cubs had all this uncertainty through a big part of the trading season and the offseason. And so that probably prevented them from making some moves that they might have made because they simply didn't know. And I have no idea why it took Major League Baseball so long.
So for the last several months, the whole attitude with the organization, the face on this was, well, we like Chris Bryant, but we don't like Chris Bryant.
Well, they're certainly not going to say, tell you what, here's an extra year. We'll take back that year of eligibility. You're a free agent. That's millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah. Did somebody else? Okay.
It's like legislative payoff money.
Right. Once you have it, it's really hard to give it up.
You know, we got a text message. We were talking about the corruption in Springfield and Chicago. If I could, like, there's sports stations and political stations. We could do a radio station. That was all.
Crossover. Sports and politics.
We wouldn't even get to sports. We would just go, here's, and now this guy's going to jail, and this happened. But somebody said, John, he was in municipal government. John, I worked in St. Louis area municipal government in the 1980s when cable TV contracts were being awarded. There was tons of cash passed around to sway Republican officials. Greed never dies. Corporations think that anything goes. I would just, this is so beyond my world. But if either as the payer or the receiver, somebody was going, all right, well, how about you? Well, here's some cash. I would just go, holy cow, it's happening. Wow. Are you kidding me? So you're going to give me money? Like, in a box? It's just so insane.
Right. Well, that's the tough part, being cool about it.
We'd be at a nice steakhouse. I stand up and go, all right, whoa. Hold on, I got to call my wife.
Is that all for me?
Brenda, guess what?
We're getting the big boat.
There was a story, Phil, you might remember, back in, I think it was in the 80s, and I don't remember, it was a member of the city council, an alderwoman, who was caught up in a bribery scandal. And the story was that the feds had video of her on her bed just sort of splashing the money around herself.
I would do that.
You know, just like, look at this money.
But I couldn't enjoy it.
I would convert it into coins and do a whole Scrooge McDuck in my basement.
At some point, don't you think, don't they ever just go, this is crappy? And then here's Marty Sandoval, who's been getting all of this money, and now he's ticked because it's sort of like major league contracts. I'm giving you $2 million a year to pay second base. Mm-hmm. All of your life's dreams are satisfied, but the other guy's getting $3 million. And you're like, well, then I'm unhappy now. Shouldn't the corruption have been enough? And yet it doesn't even seem to be that. They want more. And they don't seem to feel guilty about it either until they get caught. And then they say, I feel terrible about this.
Right.
Don't understand that.
Yeah, that's when the remorse hits when you get caught.
Phil Vitrell is the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune. And Phil, I saw a story online in your newspaper's website about the top 10 national high-end steak places. Number one, they said, was Capital Grille. And rather than you rewrite their list or comment on every point along the way, I was wondering what you thought. Do you have like three favorite they can be local. They could be chain high end steakhouses in Chicago.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I'm local. I'm local. I mean, most of the restaurants on this list, most of the steakhouses, do have a Chicago presence. The exceptions being Fleming's, which closed its River North place a year or two ago, and Del Frisco's Double Eagle Steakhouse, which is on Chicago Avenue and closed late last year.
Oh no, kidding! I didn't know that. All right, so just read the top five in case you haven't joined us.
Top five was Capital Grill,
one,
Del Frisco's, which two. Has a phenomenal line list. Smith & Wolensky, which we have in Chicago. Wolfgang Puck's, I think that's Wolfgang's.
Yeah.
I think they've got the name wrong. And then Mastro's. And we have Mastro's here.
Gibson's is on that list at number 7, I think.
It's not on the list because they're not national. Gibson's is strictly local.
Hand me that list.
Okay. It's on my list.
Hold on a second. It's just been handed to me. Morton's. Morton's is 7. Shula's is 10. Those are in Chicago as well.
Right. See, all these places that they listed have multiple locations.
Right,
where
that's
Gibson's,
the idea.
Gibson's only has here, Oak Brook, and up around Rosemont. They have two in the city.
I just got $25,000 in a shoebox from a contractor.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some money to spend. Best steak in Chicago, where do I go?
Okay, you're going to Gibson's, I think, or you're going possibly to Swift & Sons. I have a real fondness for Boeuf House out on Western Avenue. They don't have that many steaks on the menu, but they're butchering them right there. In fact, they have a butcher counter during the day. You can buy the steak raw, or you can come by in the evening and have the steak cooked for you.
Wow.
And that's a great little – it's tiny, and they maybe only have 3 steaks at any given moment, but they're great. Bevette's, Bar and Boeuf, and of course, locally you can't get away without making some mention of Gene and Giorgetti, even though their current location in River North is closed because of a fire earlier this year, last year. They still have their place out in Rosemont.
Okay, so I'll post those 5, but again, your list of 5 is, one more time?
Gibson's, Swift & Sons, Bevette's, Bar and Boeuf, Maple and Ash, and Gina Giorgetti.
Okay, that's a different list than the one you just gave me a minute ago.
I skipped one because I said Boeuf House, but I'm sticking closer to the middle of the city for this one.
Okay, that's fair enough.
I'll give me 6 and I'll add Boeuf House.
And then those are all expensive.
Yep.
Is there one that you think is, I don't want a $9 steak, I don't want a $90 steak. Where's the best value steak, would you say? I hate that word.
Yeah, it's a tough one. One of my favorites, it's kind of it's out in the suburbs. That's where you're going to get, you know, you go to a place like Tom's Steakhouse in Melrose Park.
Somebody just texted me and said they love Tom's.
And one of my favorite things, because it's a little on the kitschy side, but that's all right for me, the Golden Steer on Roosevelt Road. Yep. In Forest Park, 7635 West Roosevelt Road. It's fun, and it's a decent steak, and you're not going to spend too much, and you're going to get your salad, and you get your potato, and you're going to get all this kind of stuff, and it's a little too bright, and it's
really
a little different.
Attention restaurant owners, turn the lights down 10%.
A little bit, yeah.
We will look better, and the food will look better.
Mm-hmm.
309, John, you can get 3 steak dinners with all of the potatoes you care to eat, included with the best salad bar in town at Alexander Street Steakhouse downstate. Come back to Peoria. Dinner's on me. I think that's from Ron or Roz Helms. And we used to go to Alexander's Steakhouse all the time, and we loved it. They would cook it, or you would cook it. It was one of those concepts.
Oh, one of those things, yeah.
And I loved it. You'd take your beer, and the guys would go stand around these giant charcoal grills, and they'd talk about the game. And then the ladies would sit at the table.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so much fun.
Right. Readers of a certain, or listeners, sorry, of a certain age will remember the Stockyard Inn down where Chicago had Stockyards, which is one of those pick-your-own steaks, and you could brand it with your, they gave you a little brand, and you could brand a symbol into it, so you knew it.
I like
and
that.
Yeah, it was a pretty fancy night out once upon a time. And
hey, John, Tom's Steakhouse is awesome. No a la carte, reasonably priced steaks and potatoes. Super salad is included. You like Tom's in Melrose. Lowry's Prime Rib has everything included, like salad and potatoes. John, $20 for a potato in a restaurant. LOL. I go to Walmart and I spend $3.50 on a 10-pound bag. Cook it better than at the restaurant. Those are people who aren't actually participating in the conversation. I'm talking about going to a restaurant. Of course, you can buy the food cheaper. You could grow your own and get it for almost free. John, Log Cabin in Galena and the Palm Restaurant at the Swiss Hotel for a steak.
Okay, the Galena one I've been to, and it's nice. Again, it's very old-timey. I miss the old George Diamond Steakhouse, which was down on Wabash years and years ago. They were closed. It was like 630 South. And what was the other one he mentioned?
Lowry's Tom's.
Oh, you mentioned the Palm, which is very good. Actually, it's on the list here at number 9. You're not going to save any money there. It's a terrific restaurant. They make a great steak. They do seafood especially well, especially those big crab legs and things like that. That's the one that has caricatures of famous people in there and longtime customers drawn on the wall. It's a good place, but you're not going to save a quarter.
Is that the Palm right here outside
our
window?
Right? Yeah, exactly.
We are at 303 East Wacker, and the next building over is the Swiss Hotel, and that's where the Palm is.
You wouldn't get wet in a rainstorm. You can just run right over there.
It's 10:43. That's Phil Vitale, restaurant critic at the Tribune. Okay, so he's got another review of a new restaurant this week. And also, how's Restaurant Week going? Maybe you've got a question or a comment, a suggestion for Phil. Phil Vitale, restaurant critic, Chicago Tribune, the creator of Restaurant Week, which this year runs 17 days. We're in the back end of this thing now. How's it been going, Phil?
It's been going pretty well, from what I can tell. I've tried to get into a few restaurants this week, and everybody seems to be booked on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, which is highly unusual.
You call, everybody else, and say, I'd like to get a table for two?
I go online like everybody else, and so I use a fake name that way.
And you can't get in? Then do you ever say, do you ever pick up the phone and go, hey, Bob, it's me, Phil?
Nah, that's cheating.
Do you like making reservations online? Or would you rather pick up the phone and call? And can I get a reservation with the phone when online it says I can't?
Yes, you can. To answer the second question, absolutely yes, you can. Because I think most restaurants, and certainly any restaurants that's being smart, always holds a couple of tables back in case the Pope shows up. Or in case or something happens, or one of their most valuable customers calls the last second and said, "Oh my gosh, can you get me in?" Because when it's one of your biggest customers, the answer is yes. Yes, I can get you in. Restaurants are not a total democracy. There are investors, there are movers and shakers, there are people that get special consideration, and restaurants usually set aside a couple of tables just in case. So when you call, say, "Can I get in?" There's a chance they can take care of you.
Let's pick up a couple of phone lines for Phil Vitale. Ralph, you're on WGN. Jump in there, Ralph. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. There's a really great restaurant out in Homer Glen called The Bonfire. It's been about 20 years. It's a nice little brick building, and the steaks there are fantastic. And it's about $25, and they don't charge you extra for the potato.
That's what I'm talking about. Ralph, thanks for the call. Let's talk to Greg. You're on WGN. Greg, jump in there. What do you say?
Hey, guys, how are you? Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
I'm from over in Kalamazoo, and I'm wondering if you've heard of a place called the Black Rock Grill.
No.
And what they do is they serve you up a raw piece of meat, but they also have a 750-degree volcanic rock that sets on your table at your place, and you cook it on there. It's really, really good. It's a chain that started in Michigan, but it's coming your way.
And I guess you then cook the steak to the degree you want it, huh?
Exactly. The idea is to sear the outside, set it on the warming tray, and then slice off a piece and cook it to however you want it.
Yeah, because you could do that with it.
The most expensive piece is a $45 piece of Wagyu. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, it is. Steak? But so the point is, generally, the cuts are less expensive. What do you heard of something like that, Phil?
I've seen that trick done where you get a hot rock and you grill your own beef. The only catch is that it's got to be pretty thin. Otherwise, you'll be there a while because even a volcanic rock. So you have to cut it thin to make it work.
You would think that it would be, but it really is not because of the fact that it's 750 degrees, which is hotter than what your charcoal grill is, or if you stand at the grill down there at Peoria. It didn't take long at all. I had a good piece of sirloin that was only $23 that was a good inch and a half thick. It was fantastic.
Black Rock in Kalamazoo, Black Rock.
Right, and you don't have to wear a jacket because you'll be taking it off anyway because you're sitting next to 750 degrees of molten volcanic rock.
Greg, thanks for the call. Phil, why can't you embrace this concept? It sounds like they're having fun over there.
It does sound like fun, actually. I'm just the 750 degrees. One of the chains that's on the top 10 list is Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, and one of their conceits, and others do it too, is they bring you your plate. Your plate's been heated up to about 500 degrees.
Yeah, right.
And so you have this, and you can feel the warmth coming off the plate on your face, and My thing is, I always, when I go to Ruth's Chris, I always order the steak 1 degree less done than I like it, because it's going to keep cooking.
It's going to keep cooking on the plate.
I'll slice it and put the red side down on the plate, count to 10, pick it up as brown.
And it's done more. It is kind of a weird thing where they set the food in front of you and say, whatever you do, don't touch this thing that exactly. We've just put in front of you. Lots of text. John, hands down, if you've got $25,000, you have to spend it at RPM Steak. John, oh my gosh, the sun is out in Kingston. Woohoo! Little weather update there. 9 days is the record, and we'll set that tomorrow for consecutive cloudy days in Chicago. Carrabba's, Carrabba's in Woodridge is fantastic. Chicago Prime Steakhouse. Princess Cafe in Beecher, Illinois is amazing for steak and prime rib. And is Ruth's Chris still around, and is it good?
Yes and yes, and the plate's 500 degrees. Please be careful.
Amazing service and great martinis at Mastro's. That's on your list, right, Mastro's?
That's on their list.
They're not on yours, though.
Well, it's a large chain originated in Arizona. They do a very good job, and the lounge is kind of nice because they have a piano bar most nights, and so you can go in there for a drink. I have a friend who likes the pre martini almost as much as she likes the meal itself, and so she loves stopping in there and having a little martini and listening to music.
You know, when that guy was calling in saying Black Rock in Michigan, where you put the steak on the lava.
I think it was that Black Rock, or did he call it Wok Rock?
That one reminds me of that place, the really romantic place, the cavernous place in Chicago, where you heat the little skewers of food.
Oh, right. We're talking fondue.
Yeah, and that's a great. That's a Valentine spot for some people.
It is the biggest Valentine spot in Chicago. You can't even get in
it's
there.
It's a little kitschy for me. My brother one year got Brenda and I tickets to go there, you know, a certificate, and we had a really nice time.
Yeah.
But it was a little dark in there for me.
It's really dark.
And I would prefer somebody else just bring me the food than us romantically doing our little skewers. What's the name of the place?
Gayhouse Cafe.
Gayhouse, yeah.
And they have... And among other things, they have a really excellent wine list there.
Yeah.
Really deep, just amazing, amazingly complex wine list they have there. It's a nice place. Again, it is very dark. Sometimes they have romantic music, and that's nice. And during Valentine's Day, yeah, really hard to get in.
Gayhouse, downtown Chicago.
Some people go there just for dessert. They go there late and just go for the chocolate fondue. And just do the pound cake and the bananas and the strawberries and do that.
By the way, Marlene, you're on WGN. What's the place you like, Marlene?
Oh, hi, fellas. I just actually two places, Wildfire and Chicago Chop House. Bill's take on that.
Chicago Chop House is one of the nicest restaurants in River North. It's the one on Ontario Street, just right by where Rainforest Cafe. I mean, they've just become surrounded by all these kitschy chains. But Chicago Chop House is a Chicago original. It's one of the places that includes the baked potato with
very
your steak.
Nice.
You will pay for the steak, but it includes that. They've got a nice wine list. It's a good restaurant.
What about Wildfire?
Wildfire is another lettuce
there's
entertain you
places. There's one out in Oak Brook or out that way.
Right. They have several. It's the original one on Erie. They have their own aging room. So the steaks are aged on the premises, and they bring them out. And yeah, you will save a little bit there, not a whole lot. The only trouble I've ever had with Wildfire is every time I walk in, it's a 2-hour wait. It's very popular.
Yeah, I've had the same experience with Wildfire. I like the atmosphere. It seems to be really well done. The food's been pretty good. I haven't bought an expensive steak there, but that's not an unpopular spot. I got less than 90 seconds. Claudia is the new reviewed restaurant in the Tribune by you. It has 5 tables.
Only 5 tables. They actually have room for more, but it's a very small operation. It's the chef and maybe one assistant. He's doing all the cooking himself. He has maybe 2 people in the front room bringing things out. And it's a multi-course, 185, but right now it's BYO. So you can bring your own wines. And the website for Claudia at claudiarestaurant.com actually has very specific advice as to the kind of wines to bring to go with the food you'll be getting that night.
What cuisine is this?
This is very experimental, contemporary American cuisine, just fun stuff. He starts off with a little bento box, and you'll have these squid ink madeleines in there, and you'll have one of his go-to things is a little small piece of foie gras that is wrapped with raw tuna and topped with little ponzu gel. And that's your one bite there.
That's funny because I had that for lunch yesterday.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around. Dominic's, right? No, they're gone.
3 stars. That's an outstanding review for the Hushed Claudia in Chicago. Nice to see you, Phil. Thank you for coming in. Read them online, chicagotribune.com/dinings. Lots of comments on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. I'm not king. Paperwork's tied up in Cook County. I think things would go more efficiently if I was, though. We posted the story of the Wienermobile, which got pulled over in Wisconsin. They didn't pull over where the cop car was parked on the side. You're supposed to do that. So then the police pulled the Wienermobile over. Cop walked up to the window and he said, dot, 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 and I asked you to fill in the blank. All of that first part happened, but what do you suppose the cop said? My favorite is still from Nick Battaglia, who said, did you know that speeding in a truck is a misdemeanor? Okay, hot dog, it took me a while to catch up to you. And the list goes on. If you don't have anything to do today and you want some laughs, and you could laugh at that, they are there. But I bring it up just to read this text message, 847. Good morning, John. Do you know the rest of the story? Oscar Mayer is looking to hire 12 new drivers for their wiener vans. Applications should have been in by yesterday. I wonder if they would extend the deadline just because we're giving them all of this attention now. They're looking for young men and women that are college graduates for a year. Interviews are ongoing for the month of February. Benefits are health care, dental, and eye care. These young people would travel to fairs and festivals selling their hot dogs.
It's a pretty competitive internship sort of program.
I understand it is. And I know somebody whose daughter was a Wienermobile driver. And now I don't remember who that person was. It wasn't Dave Ennett, was it? He has a delightful, his daughter. It was somebody else whose kid was a wiener driver. Hotel would be covered by the company when they're traveling. Driver training is provided by the company. Also, the next time you do a wiener storyline, how about playing the Oscar Mayer wiener song? Oh, I'd love to be an Oscar Mayer wiener. I got this text message. Actually, this was an email to the station yesterday. It said, hey, John, next time you have Mr. Drucker on from the Secretary of State's office, ask him why the DMV is declining older issued Social Security cards. I am 63 and applied for my card when I was about 15. Well, I went in today to get the real ID with all of the ID documents required. Passport, bills, Social Security card issued in the early 70s. The staffer declined my Social Security card and said it is only the stub and that they needed the paper that was attached to it. What? I was confused. I went home and retrieved a W-2 instead. After successfully getting through the lines and applying for the real ID, I then went to the Social Security office, and they told me the DMV was wrong. Some of us still have our original Social Security cards. I got mine when I was 16, and they're paper. They are so, you know, forgeable or fudgeable. I don't know if they accept those or not. Dave Drucker is the press secretary for the Secretary of State's office. Hey, Dave, good morning. Can you help us out on this?
Good morning, John. Yeah, I think I might be interested in applying for that Wienermobile job.
That sounds like fun to me. It really does.
here's the situation. I don't physically know which document she showed the person. So I'm from the email that you all described. It was the actual Social Security card. That's what we accept. And she is owed an apology. And I do so profusely. And sorry she's had to go through this runaround. On the other hand, the employees are trained not to accept the stub of the card.
And I don't
conceivably,
even know. What's the stub? Do you know, Dave? What are you talking about?
The stub is... I'm not quite sure how to describe it.
Your card comes attached to a larger piece of paper.
Card, yeah. Yeah, and it has some of the information on, but...
They want to see the actual card. But if you have a 40, 50, 60-year-old Social Security card, it doesn't... by today's standards, seem very legit, right? It's paper. It's typed upon.
Yeah, I understand that. There's probably about four or five different types going back historically of different designed cards that are out there. And we are constantly, and have been for some time now, training employees, you know, how to read them and what to accept and that sort of thing. So, again, I would go back. If it was the card, we're terribly sorry for her inconvenience. Okay. If it was the stub, you know, that they actually probably did do the right thing.
Understood. But I suppose this, tell me if this is good advice then. Say you do have a Social Security card, and it is however old, and somebody says, oh, we don't take this Social Security card. Could you ask to speak to a supervisor? You know,
don't create a scene,
but just say, you know, I heard Dave Drucker on the radio. Could we just get one more opinion on this, right?
Yeah, John, before I came on, I checked with the head of driver services and asked them that very question that you just asked me, because I didn't know. And they said they should seek out the supervisor and say that that they heard this was the issue and that they feel that this is the card.
Every now and then, Dave, I'll get an email or text message. I probably will, especially now that I just put you on. But if you don't mind, once in a while, rather than putting you on with 100 different questions and 100 different scenarios, I'll just bring up some of the more common ones to you, and maybe you could help
absolutely.
Us out as we go.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you've got a very important listenership, yourself, your program, and WGN in general. And we've encountered a lot of interest with WGN listeners, so we certainly want to answer their questions.
Fair enough. All right, Dave. Dave Drucker from the Secretary of State's office. I know you're busy. You're going to head over to the governor's speech, right?
Yeah, I'm going to escort Mr. White up to the House chambers here shortly.
Oh, sure, that would be your
governor has to say.
Yeah, Secretary of State's office, Jesse White, press secretary for that office. Okay, Dave, we'll visit down the road again. Thanks for your help today.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
Well, I guess that's all you can do. They apologize if they got it wrong. And if you think you're in the right, stamp and scream, you know, stamp your feet and scream. But then just say, could I speak to a supervisor? Because I'm pretty sure this Social Security card should be accepted. That's such a hassle. So there you are. You've waited in line. And then they say no. So now you've got to go home, get that other document. Good luck finding that. Then bring that back, wait in line again, and hope that this time it works. They told me at the Social Security office, our listener said that the DMV was wrong. Yes, this is your Social Security card, but we can get you a new copy, they said. I only needed my passport for the new Social Security card. So take your passport, get the Social Security card, take the new card, take it over to the DMV. This time they let you in, but they should have let you in the first time.
So again, it's easier to get a Social Security card than it is to get a driver's license.
That has befuddled you ever since
this
happened.
Crazy.
Yeah. In fact, you need more documentation to drive the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile, as it turns out,
than to get a real ID.
Dave Otter texted in, over the past couple of years, the Cubs have made it very clear that they don't want any more of this lifelong Cubs fans' money or attention business, and I have decided to oblige them. I'm not going to have any, what do they call it, tag days for Chris Bryant, and I don't think that his feelings should get hurt. But it just seems to me like you had that prized possession, Chris Bryant, and that whatever it is you need to do to make him happy so he hits home runs and fields grounders for you, they haven't been doing that. I don't know if the first mistake was the year that they brought him up late so they'd save a year on the back end when he was worth a lot of money. But whatever it was the Cubs did, and again, I don't even know all of this fancy baseball jargon. So maybe you're rolling your eyes, and I'm really wrong about this, but it just seemed to me like making Chris Bryant happy and Cubs fans happy about Chris Bryant should be a priority, and it doesn't seem to me like the Cubs are doing it. Now, Bertrand and none other than restaurant critic Phil Vitale said, hey, it's business. You can't get your feelings hurt. Fans, Chris Bryant, it's business. That's the way things happen. So I'll keep that in mind. Saw a piece online yesterday, and it had this question. Is wearing a face mask preventing you from getting the coronavirus or other things? I see those people with face masks sometimes in unusual places, walking down the street, at a store. And then I think, well, maybe I shouldn't be that close to them. I was in the emergency room at St. Joe's Hospital in Joliet for most of Sunday. A friend fell and they're going to be okay, but it was a long, arduous day in and out of the ER on Sunday. And they got busier and busier as the day went on. And when I left, that ER was packed on Sunday. And half of the people had those masks on. Sometimes you're at the hospital and you think, this is the unhealthiest place on earth to be. I thought, maybe I shouldn't be here because whatever's going on, I don't want. And all of these people have masks on and I don't have one. So I thought, maybe I should be wearing one. Ah, don't be an alarmist. You don't need one. And how protective are those things anyway? That was the question put forward on one website. And I thought, boy, I just ran into that the other day. Let's get a doctor to talk to us about those. Should you be wearing one and when? We'll do that at 11:30. It's 11:19 on WGN Radio. And then one other thing, and that is all of the text messages about steakhouses came in today. I don't know if you regularly go to a steakhouse or not, but a lot of you have ones that you just love and are happy to pass along. John Bellamia in Midlothian is my best value steakhouse. Italian strip steak smothered in butter and garlic. Garlic floats by the boat for $35. The ambiance is old school dark paneling, white tablecloths, and waiters. In fact, one last thing about all of this. Phil Vitale, the critic, was in our studio. He usually comes by around 10:30 on Wednesdays. There he was. And we were talking about the great steakhouses in America and what are the great ones in Chicago. So Phil was sort of spitting out his list, and as he left, he handed me his paperwork and said, here, I've numbered them for you, 7 to 1, his best steakhouses. And so he said, number 7 was RPM, 6 Gene and Giorgetti's, 5 Boeuf House. Or do you say Beef House? B-O-E-F-H-A-U-S-E. Number 4, Bavette's. Number 3, Maple and Ash. Number 2, Swift and Sons. And in Chicago, number 1, he said, was Gibson's. He said this about number 7, RPM Steak. They're all great. They're all really expensive. He said there probably is not a glitzier place than RPM Steak. You walk in and you know you're at a big boy restaurant now. He said, I shouldn't have been wearing the Dockers. That is a fancy, fancy restaurant. He wasn't put off by it. He thought it was lush. You see the money, but it's really fantastic. He really enjoyed his experience there. And I think it was at Maple and Ash also, he said, was really cool because when you go there, you know you're at a nice restaurant when, as you wait, they just come along with tiny little martinis, just that big. And it's just a little sip or two while you're waiting. No charge, just welcome. Some places will give you a cup of coffee, maybe a roll, maybe a piece of candy.
Those rye crackers in plastic.
But a little mini martini, I want to go there. Hey, Christy, you're on WGN. Good morning. What can we do for you? Oh, hold on. Let's try it again. Hey, Christy, it's John. You're on the air. Are you there? Here she comes. Hey, Christy. Boom. Christy works at, and now I just lost what it was about to say on my screen, too. Radio stations require a lot of equipment, and ours has not all been working real well today. Hey, Kate, you're on WGN. Let's see if we can put you on the air. Hi, Kate. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, John. How are you?
Good. Talk to me. What's on your mind?
All right. Jack Gibbons. Did you ever hear of that?
Yeah, I have.
Southwest Suburbs.
Is that at one of the casinos, or is that freestanding steakhouse?
It's a freestanding steakhouse. It has been there for years. It's off of, actually, it's called Justamere Road, and 147th. It is awesome. I mean, the whole thing is that they give you is that, you know, you have that the celery tray or the can't think of the name of it, you know, where they bring out the,
like a little oil and some relish.
The relish tray.
Yeah,
they bring that out, and but everything is included, and they are just on this little corner, but their steaks are phenomenal.
Yeah. What's one of those bad boys set you back, Kate? How much for a steak dinner there?
Probably about, it depends. I'd go with the prime rib, the queen cut, so I'm saying about $32, $33.
That's not bad. Hey, Kate, thanks for the phone call. Jack Binions. No, that's Jack Gibbons. Jack Gibbons. I've heard of Binions, and that's, I think, the one that...
Isn't Binions? No, Binny's is a liquor store.
Don't. If you can't...
I really was trying to help.
Two kinds of things you can say in the world,
I really was
Steve.
Trying to help.
Do you know what the two kinds of things are that you can say in the world?
You're right, John.
There's helping things and hurting things. Yesterday, or rather on Monday, we did our Mega Monday morning quiz. Every Monday morning now, usually around 11:35, about this time, we do a quiz. It's sponsored by our friends at Mega Pros. And if you get it all right or if you get them all wrong, we still give you the Mega hoodie. Since last weekend was the anniversary of the Bears winning the Super Bowl, we did some Bears, White Sox, Cubs, Blackhawks. We did all our five big teams' championship trivia. And we had a couple of questions about the White Sox. When we got done, Pete McMurray sent me a text related to a story about the White Sox that I don't think I knew. Hey, Pete, are you there?
I blame myself, John.
For what?
For that one loss in the 2005 playoffs. That was my fault.
That was the question. So we said, I mean, there was a lot of ways to pull cool trivia facts because it was an exceptional playoff. But the White Sox, one of the things that was unique about their playoff run, a World Series win, was that for the entire playoff run, they only lost one game. And in the World Series, their four consecutive wins were all complete games, which you'll never,
right.
You will never, ever see again, right?
Never, never, ever. Yes.
So what was your story about all of that?
Well, it was game one of the ALCS against the Angels that the White Sox lost, and I blame myself. And for people that were watching the news, the 6 o'clock news before the game saw my name on screen. You know, Boston won the World Series, I think, in 04, right? And we swept them the first series. We won 3-0, and everybody thought, we're going to the World Series. So I thought to myself, game one is here. The Angels are staying at the Westin on Michigan Avenue. Let's take breakfast over to the starting Angels pitcher and wake him up.
Oh, Pete.
So I sent my street guy, his name was Mender at the time. I said, pick up a beef sandwich and a tall boy old style, and we'll take him a Chicago breakfast. So I called the hotel. For some way, we got his room number. I think I said I had to send a fax. And I wanted to make sure it went to his room.
Wait a minute. So you were able to figure out where he was, and now you're sending your lackey over to wake up the starting pitcher that's going to face the White Sox, right? Hold on a second. Let me finish this story just after news headlines. Pete, can you give me one more minute?
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's go back to Pete McMurray, already in progress. Hi, Pete.
Steakums were terrible.
That sounds like a Gaffigan bit or a John Mulaney bit, doesn't it?
It does. It sounds like a Gaffigan thing with Hot Pockets and Steakums. What is Steakums?
I can get you a box of them from Instacart for $4.49.
They still have them at Jewel. I've seen them. Absolutely.
I played once on this radio station. I think it was here. The Jim Gaffigan bit about Hot Pockets. And it is so funny, but so damning for the entire Hot Pocket industry that a guy called in and he was laughing still. And he goes, oh, that was really funny, but can you do that? Because that's terrible for Hot Pockets. No one will ever want to eat a Hot Pocket again. Of course, you can play it on the radio, but boy, it was funny and true, right? So, Pete,
it's so true.
Our quiz on Monday, one of the questions was about the White Sox and the fact that they only lost one game in the playoff run. What you were telling us a story about how you sent your intern or something over to the Angels starting pitcher before one of the games, right?
Well, it was game one. The Angels just came to town, and it's no secret that Major League Baseball puts the players up, the opposing team's players, at the Westin on Michigan Avenue.
Oh.
That's why if you drive by on game day, if the Cubs are playing, you can see people out there to try to get autographs. So it's no secret. So I called the hotel. I somehow got his room. Some of these players still stay under their own name, and I sent my guy over there.
Okay, that's just amazing to me. That it just seems to me like everybody's so insulated, fans from these celebrities, that you wouldn't be able to pull that off. So your guy now is what, the morning of the game?
Yes, my show started at 9 a.m., so at 8 o'clock, I made him go over to Al's Beef, grab a beef sandwich, and pick up a tall boy old style. We were going to set him up with a Chicago breakfast. So he gets to the hotel, he walks up to the room, and I said, okay, Mender, walk up to the door and gently knock on the door. So he gives a little knock, and we wait, and nothing happens. And I said, again, you need to knock a little bit harder. So he knocks a little bit harder, nothing. Well, what I came to find out afterwards was the valet guys listened to my show, because when I worked the Loop in the Hancock, I used to park across the street, and I know all those guys, so they listened to me every day. So the people at the hotel could hear on the radio that my guy was at the hotel. So they send security up. My guy hears the elevator doors open, and I tell him, you should get out of there. So he runs down the stairwell, and I said, hold on a second. In the movies, they have security waiting in the lobby,
right?
So you should stop on the second floor. Of course, this is all on the radio. So
right.
When he gets off on the second floor, security is waiting. He gets arrested. They take him to the police station on Division. So he was arrested at 10 a.m. They keep him until 6 o'clock. The 6 o'clock news starts. Rob Johnson, I can still see it today. I have the video somewhere. They have a live shot of my guy, Mender, walking out of the police station. I greet him. We get in my car and drive away. Then, of course, the White Sox go on to lose. I think it was 1-0, game one. That was the only game they lost. And again, I apologize to the city.
Your scheme kind of backfired. Their pitcher evidently wasn't so upset, huh?
Well, yeah, I want to say that the White Sox could hit. They just couldn't score in that game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They put up a lot of runs. I was looking at the scores through the playoffs and in the World Series, for that matter. They had no trouble scoring runs for most of the games except the one that you jinxed. Well, that's funny. I'd heard versions of that, or I've heard you allude to that, but all right. Winnie on the radio again, Pete.
Saturday, I'm in for Mr. Fix-It. So if you need something fixed, call me on Saturday morning.
Don't call Pete.
We have an expert in. Don't worry. Mike Holmes is coming in. He's an expert. Lou's on vacation.
We'll listen for you then. Thanks, Pete.
All right. Thanks, buddy. See ya.
Pete McMurray, you hear him a lot here at WGN Radio. Speaking of experts, we reached out to Dr. Mark Dworkin. He is an infectious disease physician and a professor of epidemiology at the UIC School of Public Health. I've been seeing more and more people with those face masks on, and I think a fair question, especially with this coronavirus, is how effective are they? Should you have one on? When should you have it on? Hey, Doc, this is John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you? Good morning.
Hi, good. How are you?
I'm doing real well, thanks. Lucky me, right? I mean, it's flu season, to say nothing of coronavirus. How would you characterize in Chicago the flu season this year?
Well, we got hit with a relatively early wave of the flu season. A lot of years we talk about January, February being a big time for initially seeing a rise in cases. But this year it seemed to come earlier, especially early January. And it was a strain that we often see at the end of the season peaking, which is B. And this year it was B early, B first, that was the main one. So that was different.
Should I still get a flu shot if I haven't yet?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Everybody should try to protect themselves from the flu, and the flu vaccine is a safe way to do that. I wish it was more effective than it is, but it definitely is helpful. And, you know, from year to year, it changes how effective it is. But, you know, it helps prevent hospitalization, especially in people who have underlying conditions, you know, like lung disease, heart disease, you know, it's elderly.
Before I get to coronavirus, just in general, if somebody in my midst has the flu, maybe they don't know it or I don't know it. If I wear one of those face masks, will that keep me from getting the flu from them?
Well, you know, there's a lot of factors that play into whether or not we get the flu from somebody. And one of the big ones is, you know, the so-called respiratory droplet. So wearing a face mask, if you're in close contact with somebody who has the flu, that is something that would be helpful. If you don't know that they have the flu, obviously, you know, we don't recommend just going around from day to day with a face mask on. But if, like, you're visiting somebody in the hospital and they're known to have the flu, or you know, you live with somebody and they've got a flu-like illness, looks pretty classic to be the flu, you know, then if you have a face mask and you're living with them, there could be some protection there. But hand hygiene is really the biggest one that we talk about. Because, you know, flu and other viruses and germs can be in the environment around people who are sick with them. You know, they sneeze, they cough, and they put the germs out.
Is it that the way most people get it? Is maybe I touch the rail or the thing that you touched, and then I touch my eye or my nose or my mouth. We do that all day long. And that's how we transfer it, as opposed to you breathing on me.
Yeah, you know, I wish we really knew. Because we, you know, there are no studies that have shown how you mostly get it. We believe that you mostly get it from touching, and we know you also can get it from respiratory droplets if you're in close contact with somebody, you know, like within 3 feet or so. And sometimes, in some people and in some conditions, the flu virus may even aerosolize, which means, you know, you're in the same room with them, or they're recently in a room, and you could theoretically get it. We see this sometimes. Sometimes people are on a respirator in the hospital, a ventilator.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to be extra careful under those situations.
Well, doctor, I had two other questions, one specifically about coronavirus and one in general. I was at an ER the other day and I didn't have a face mask on. Should I have? And how effective would you say from coronavirus those face masks are? Give me a minute and answer that question for us. If you've got a question for a doctor, 312-981-7200. Let's just take a couple more minutes from a very busy doctor, Mark Dworkin's on a phone line, infectious disease physician and professor of epidemiology at the UIC School of Public Health. We're just talking about face masks. Let's jump into that one, doctor. Would those be helpful or protective against the coronavirus?
Yeah, a face mask ought to provide protection against coronavirus. We suspect that the coronavirus, like other ones that we've seen before and like other diseases like the flu, it's going to provide you with blocking, you know, droplet spread when people cough and sneeze. You know, droplets go out in the atmosphere. They often fall. Most droplets will fall, you know, within 3 feet of somebody. But that mask is definitely going to provide some protection. But that doesn't mean I'm saying that the ordinary person needs to walk around wearing such a mask, because, as you know, we hardly have any cases in the United States right now of the coronavirus.
But I do see people doing that, and I sometimes wonder why. Is it because they don't want to get what I've got, or they don't want to give me what they've got? Why are some people walking around with those?
Well, I'm not sure. Most people, I would guess, who are doing that these days are, you know, heightened concern. They've listened to the media reports, and there's some fear there. In Asia, it's more common to go around with a mask on. If you yourself are ill, like you've got a cold, it's a polite thing to do in Asia to wear the mask under that setting.
I've noticed a lot of Asians or Asian Americans in Chicago in the Midwest that do that, and I wonder sometimes how nice of them to not give me their disease, although I've at times thought, oh, no, wait, they're hyper nervous or sensitive about something. And I'm like, hey, chill, we're going to be okay, you know?
Right. Yeah, and you mentioned, too, that you were in an emergency room.
Yeah.
And they were concerned whether you should have been wearing a mask. Well, you know, it's certainly appropriate for healthcare workers to be wearing a mask. And if you're going to be in close contact with somebody who's sick, if you were going into the emergency room to interview somebody who has a cough, illness, and so on, then it would have made sense for you to have to wear a mask. But if you're walking through an emergency room under ordinary conditions, although it is a higher risk setting, the ordinary person doesn't need to have a mask on.
And if somebody in my family has the flu, you know, and I'm taking care of them, should I wear the mask around my home?
That would make sense, as well as very much heightened attention to touching yourself, touching your mouth, your nose, your eyes. You want to avoid those, and you want to have frequent hand washing, because you want to assume that the environment of somebody who's living with an illness like flu, you know, is contaminated.
What do you make of antibacterial wipes all around the house?
I think the antibacterial wipes is a good thing in general. You know, it provides another measure of trying to protect yourself. I mean, I don't see that that need on an ordinary basis, you know, but when you're with somebody who's ill, taking care of somebody who's ill, it especially is helpful.
Well, does that antibacterial stuff take care of the virus that a flu would be from?
Yeah, so that's a good point. Is, you know, we talk about bacteria, we talk about viruses. They're both germs. The one, the virus, is smaller than the other, and they have their different stories sometimes with each of these diseases. But these antibacterial wipes, they basically provide moisture and then drying is what happens. And germs, in general, they don't like to be dried out. So it is helpful to, you know, wipe away and that moisture drying effect.
Huh. It's funny because at the hospital the other day, those foam antibacterial foam things, dispensers, are everywhere. And on the one hand, I always hear, oh, you know, we've relied so much on antibacterials that we've made ourselves immune from, or we're creating super bacteria, and we shouldn't use those as much. Maybe I'm thinking of antibiotics, but it's funny, though, that wherever you go in the hospital, those things are everywhere.
Yeah, well, you're bringing up a good point. When we say antibacterial, what we really should be saying is like alcohol-based hand sanitizer. That's what we're really talking about here. When you add some sort of like antibiotic type thing into these solutions, that's a whole other story. And then you might cause some sort of emergence of some resistance. But just the general use of alcohol-based hand sanitizer, that creates this drying effect that's helpful.
Patty, you had a question for the doctor. What was it? You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I just wondered how long germs lasted on elevator buttons or doorknobs, like not just corona. Like if somebody had the flu and they're pressing on these buttons, do they last a long time on the...
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a practical kind of question. I find that I've looked at some old literature, you know, years ago. This sorts of studies I see would get done. We're talking about many decades ago, and so it's hard to really say precisely how long. But what you can say basically is that in a public setting, something like an elevator button, you know, you should assume during, you know, peak flu season and so on, that it can be contaminated. If you wish to protect yourself, you're not going to have access to hand washing soon after, then you're perfectly fine to, you know, touch it with your elbow or whatever, and you don't even have to worry about that sort of thing. But moisture in an environment, humidity, these all play a role in exactly how long any germ's gonna survive. But, you know, they certainly can survive longer than minutes on a button, and so it's something to be aware of.
Longer than minutes. Thanks for the call, Patty, but I thought you were going to say not that long. To me, under an hour is not that long. That is, if somebody came along and touched that, within the hour, that whatever it was would have passed or died. Am I right about that?
Again, it's going to depend on environmental conditions. It's going to change whether it can last for hours or it's going to last for minutes. You know, how much touching has gone on? Has there been any hand cream on anybody's hand? You know, that's going to create moisture on that button, and maybe that'll allow for prolonged survival. So, you know, and then when does somebody come along and actually clean these buttons? I don't even know.
That's a good question. Rick says, hey, John, what about wearing a mask on an airplane? That, to me, here again, seems to be hyper proactive, but now I'm starting to think maybe that's not a bad idea.
Well, you know, it's... Theoretically, there could be some benefit, especially during peak flu season when, you know, there's a good chance that maybe somebody is traveling who's got a cold or the flu or whatever. You know, I certainly wouldn't object to anybody doing it. Is it needed, you know, broadly? No. That's why there's no recommendation for us all to be doing that when we ride around on planes. And some of these planes have better air filtration than others. But... you know, there is a real risk of getting sick when you fly because you're going to be around a crowded public space. And so if somebody chooses to do that as a personal decision, I don't object to it, but it's not like a broad recommendation.
309 said, John, I'm wearing that mask because I just don't want to breathe cold air. Fair enough. 630 said, I took my son back to Miami of Ohio on Sunday and was surprised and somewhat concerned with the number of students. Appeared to be the Asian students with masks on. It was unsettling. I completely get that. And it seems to me like this is somewhat cultural, Doc, that they're not that sick and we're not going to make them sick. But that seems to be standard procedure for some people.
Yeah. I mean, years ago, I was in Japan in February, and was walking around on the streets, and I saw quite a few people who were wearing surgical masks, and I asked about it, and you know, I was told that they were likely had a cold, and they were just you know, protecting others. It's just what they do, so I wouldn't be concerned about that.
But the but what I'm hearing you say is, yeah, in an immediate situation, somebody's got a flu in your family or in the ER, sure. But as a general rule of thumb, we don't need to go that far. Ella, if you had a quick question for the doctor too.
Yeah, what does it mean when a disinfecting wipe box says it kills 99.9% of bacteria?
You're worried about the 0.1% that's out there?
Yeah, why does it say that? Why doesn't it say 100%
then? That's a good question. Well, you know, not every single germ is going to be got in every situation. I think they're also being, you know, thoughtful and careful about the claim that it's not perfect. They probably don't want to get sued because they can't guarantee absolutely under all situations things are going to occur.
Dr. Mark Dworkin's an infectious disease physician, professor of epidemiology, UIC School of Public Health. Nice to talk to you today, doctor. We appreciate your help.
All right, thanks.
You betcha. 11:55. What's coming up in the news? What's the latest on the weather, the impeachment questions, and what's Xi doing on the business front? That's all coming up. Down the hall we go. Xi, what's the latest? What are you guys doing today?
We're going to be talking with Terry Savage, so go ahead and get your questions and texts in. Also, we're going to be talking about vegan trends in business, and we're also going to have a CEO of a customer experience automation company. If you don't know what that is, he will explain it. The company's name is ActiveCampaign, and the really cool thing is they just secured another round of funding for $100 million. So they're going to be growing a lot and also hiring folks. So we're going to learn a lot more about the company and what they do.
Hiring folks in Chicago, I think, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And they're expanding globally, too. So, yeah, just imagine raising $100 million.
Love it that they're hiring in the city, too.